Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Have you heard about Impact Fairfield County? This is a women's collective giving organization that allows women in Fairfield County to pool donations in order to fund large transformational grants. Hundreds of members contribute $1,000 each, and as an organization, Impact Fairfield County gives awards of $100,000 to local nonprofits through a competitive grant process. The next round of grants for qualified nonprofits opens October 16th. So if you're involved with or volunteer for or get services from a nonprofit that operates programs in Fairfield County, stay tuned and learn more. Then we're going to be introducing Thinline Peer Support Team, a nonprofit organization providing peer-to-peer mental health assistance to first responders, active military, and veterans, as well as facilitating access to more comprehensive mental health resources, including drug and alcohol programs here in Connecticut. Their first major fundraiser, called Walk the Line, is happening on October 21st and 22nd. So hang around and hear all about the cause and how you can help or even come out and support this fundraiser in person. Then we're going to close hearing about the Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame, bringing educational programs and resources designed to share women's stories of struggle and accomplishment and offer creative ways to bring Connecticut women's history to life for current and future generations. The hall is hosting its induction ceremony and 30th anniversary celebration October 26th, and maybe you could benefit from being part of this statewide organization. Hang around and you'll hear all about it. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Adventures, artworks, and a host of other items will be up for bid during the Little Britches virtual auction online starting October 23rd through November 3rd. All proceeds from the event benefit Little Britches Therapeutic Writing, a nonprofit that helps kids and adults from dozens of Western Connecticut communities with special needs discover their strengths through therapeutic horseback riding. So check out the full auction listings and start bidding on October 23rd. 23rd through the Little Britches website, littlebritchesct.org. Well, we always like to open the program when we meet somebody new or we become familiar with an organization, whether it's new to the award-winning For the People or new to the area. In this case, Impact Fairfield County has been really doing some awesome work over the past 8 or 9 years. They established in 2015, and they're a collective giving organization whose specific mission is empowering women to engage in local philanthropy through participation in grant making. And you might remember back a few weeks ago when we talked to the co-founder of the Waterbury Black Women's Giving Circle, and as I was chatting with their co-president of Impact Fairfield County, Jenny San Jose, who's on the phone with us now, it was kind of running in the same lane. And so this was a nice kind of, second chapter to our looking at organizations that have sort of grown from the grassroots on up, but that are fostering leadership in philanthropy in the region with specific membership. So Jenny, great to meet you. And thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, great to meet you. Thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to talk about Impact Fairfield County.
So in the 8 years since this organization really kind of humbly formed among a few women pulling their membership funds to provide grants, this has mushroomed into quite an acreage of Benjamins here. $1.8 million, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
8 years.
Over $1.8 million. Yeah.
Fantastic. So,
We're so proud of that growth. I mean, as you said, it's a really grassroots kind of organization. So to go from, a few women to over $1.8 million in grant funding, we're really proud.
Yeah. Now, did you come to the organization early after its inception?
I wasn't one of the earliest members. I joined probably 4 years or so into it. Most of our membership is built through word of mouth. You know, our members have such a good experience and they let their friends and contacts know. And so that's how I heard about it. A friend of mine had invited me to a coffee to find out more. And once I heard about the concept, I was so interested and really wanted to get involved. So now, you know, it's been about 5 years that I've been involved, and now I'm co-president of the organization. Just kept getting more and more involved.
Yeah, right. Well, good people are often recognized and pulled in to lead or manage organizations of this nature. And it's great that they discovered you and brought you in, and that you advanced to this leadership role. To the extent you know about Impact Fairfield County's kind of, you know, humble and social beginnings, what could you tell us about the time between 2015 and when you joined, you know, about 4 years later?
Sure. So it was founded by two women in Greenwich, Wendy Block and Vindy Craver, and they had heard about this Impact 100 model. So the model itself was started by a woman in Ohio, and it's very simple. It's basically each member donates $1,000 to a grant pool, and if you get 100 members together, you can give out one large $100,000 grant. And so Vicky and Wendy were really excited about this model of getting a lot of local women involved, you know, having this collective giving circle and being able to make a difference together. So they, you know, told a bunch of their friends, got a group together. And so in that first year, in 2016, they gave out one large $100,000 grant. From there, more and more people joined. Now we're able to give out two $100,000 grants each year. Last year, we had 264 members. So in addition to the two $100,000 grants, we also give out that $64,000 to the finalists in our grant process. So every dollar that comes into our grant funding goes out that year in grants. And that's what is so exciting. It's a new grant year every year. It's different membership every year, and we keep building and growing. And the more members we get, the more grants that we can give out each year. So it just, you know, it's always an exciting process, even though we, you know, it runs very similar. The model is the same each year, but it can vary so much from year to year. And that's what keeps it exciting.
A lot of people, men or women or others, are always looking for an opportunity, I think, to be able to get involved with an organization that seems to be, you know, well established, irrelevant of its tenure or length of existence, that seems to, you know, run on an extremely simple framework. And Impact Fairfield County really sounds like you know, it's you know, bringing the people, they write the checks, you get a pretty substantial number of members who are weighing in on ranking and moving the finalists to the top positions to award those grants.
Right.
So I'm sure there's a lot of people that are either listening to the broadcast or the podcast who are saying, boy, I know somebody who might want to be involved in this organization, or they themselves might want to be. How do you go about building your membership?
Yeah, we welcome women that live and work in Fairfield County who want to get involved. We are open to any woman who's interested in being involved in Impact Fairfield County. And as you said, it's something you can really dive into. It's a very democratic type of organization and process. Every woman, it's one donation, one vote. So you are, you know, able to have a voice in this giving model. And we are, you know, open to membership right now. We typically spend from June to December building our membership each grant year. And then in January is when the evaluation process starts. So anybody who would like to serve on a review committee is welcome to. And then we split up all the applications that we get into five different review committees. And these women really, you know, they spend a lot of time. We do a deep dive into the application. We make site visits to the organizations. And then ultimately, we select five finalists that go to the, you know, award celebration in May. The five finalists present about their project that they're asking for a grant for, And then we vote right then and there on who is going to get the grant, and we announce it right then and there. So it's a very, very exciting morning. It's in early May, and everybody is able to participate in it. So that's what makes Impact, I think, so special. It's just everybody is able to, you know, dive in and get as involved as they'd like to. It's an all-volunteer run organization. We don't have any paid staff. So it's the passion of the members who are in it that really make this organization run. And, you know, I think you can hear that when you speak to any of our members. Mm. But we, you know, we really welcome more women to get involved in it. As I said, it's been kind of a word of mouth organization, you know, throughout the years. And we've been fortunate in that it does, you know, grow really organically. But we would love more women to be involved because, as I said, then we'd be able to give out even more grant funding. And we know the nonprofits around here really need it. So, you know, we'd like to have even more women who are interested join us. And they're welcome to right now. You can go to our website, impactffc.org. You can join right now. And we also have financial assistance available and scholarship programs. So we don't want that membership fee to be a barrier to anybody who's interested. We have programs that will assist with that as well.
No, very good. So just to make the math easy on my poor head, having given your last benchmark is 264,000. So if six more women join before the next round of grant review and awards, then you'll do 270,000. And then if
yes,
10
exactly.
more, it'll be two. Yeah. Okay. So it's really, it's just
$1,000 in, $1,000 out. That's our model. So it's, you're exactly right. The members that we have determine the grant pool each year.
And it, just due to the way things are structured, you're not limited on how many people you can potentially welcome into the ranks each year. It's just whoever comes forward, who expresses the commitment and will make the donation or participate in the scholarshiping or the assistance program.
Right, exactly. There is no, you know, preset limit. It's, you know, we've been about around this 250 number for the last few years, which is a really wonderful size for us because as an organization, we as members also can get to know each other. We have sort of an intimate experience. But if we grew, that would just be a slightly different experience. And, you know, then we'd be able to have more review committees, give out more grants. So it would just, it would look a little different, but the experience would still be the same of women coming together, you know, making this collective decision and awarding grants to nonprofits.
Well, for an all volunteer driven, no staff organization to be able to successfully give out a little over $250,000 a year, it is mm-hmm. incredible. It's wonderful, and kudos to each and every one of your members so far.
I mean, it's really just such a, you know, it's a passionate group of women, yeah. And you know, it really is a lot of hands behind the scenes making this work.
To be a fly on the wall in some of those grant review committee meetings must be the ideal job to seek, right?
And it's a really, you know, we view it also as part of our mission to educate women about philanthropy. And, you know, I was pretty new to philanthropy when I came into this organization. And so that's also part of the benefit is if you sit on a review committee, you see these grants up close, you see what organizations are asking for. It's a level of participation that I didn't have as an individual donor to a nonprofit. And so that's kind of the other special piece of it. You can get involved as much as you want to, but anybody who does do the grant review process, it's so rewarding.
Yeah, yeah. So the good news is that there's three nonprofits out there, I guess, in the coming months who will be applying and vetted and will receive one of the next round of grants. And that grant application period starts as we play this program on October Tax Day on Sunday. It's Monday the 16th of October is when nonprofits can begin to come to your website and looking into applying for one of these grants.
Yes, that's right. October 16th is the opening day for letters of inquiry. They can go to our website. We have an Apply Now tab on the website. There's also a lot of information about the parameters of our grant, frequently asked questions, important dates, all of that. But you can go from our website and apply right into our, we use a grant management software program called SlideRoom. So you go right in and apply through SlideRoom. And the letter of inquiry process is open until November 13th.
And if we could spend just a few moments talking about some of the application criteria.
Yes, absolutely. So we are open to organizations in Fairfield County. Our grant funds must be used for programs and projects that are benefiting residents of Fairfield County. So it could be a national nonprofit that applies, but the program that they're applying for must benefit residents of Fairfield County. We have a list on our website of some of the, exclusions of what we do not fund. But, generally we are open to any program that's going to be benefiting residents of Fairfield County. One of the big parameters that I will mention, because it does come up, we do require organizations to have 3 years of independently audited financial statements. Mm-hmm. There are some smaller organizations that don't have that, and so that is a barrier, but it's something we feel really strongly about because we really stand behind our review process and our vetting, and we want all of our members to be completely confident that when we are awarding our grants, it's to an organization that's been thoroughly vetted. So, we really do put a lot of thought behind the criteria and the grant process. We are happy to talk to anybody about our criteria. They can email us at grants@impactffc.org. But there's, like I said, a lot of information on our website, and it really is great if organizations read through all that and familiarize themselves with the criteria before applying.
And as awesome as some of the grantee programs may be or have been, you do have it looks like a criteria in place so that everybody gets a chance. There's there's no back to back or three-peat grantees until after a certain period of time passes, and then they can reapply again, right?
Yes, that's right. So if you've won a $100,000 grant, you do have to wait 3 years before you can reapply. So like you said, we do like to give, a fair chance to all the organizations in our area. And there's so many wonderful nonprofits out there doing amazing work. And we want our members to learn about them and to hear about them. So it is something that, we do ask them to enjoy their 2-year grant term and sit out another year and before they come back into the process.
And to be clear again, if two nonprofits are selected for $100,000 each, it's mm-hmm. sort of like the third runner up will get whatever the balance is based on the remaining number of members' contributions?
Yeah, so actually we have 5 what we call finalists, and they're the ones that present at our grant award celebration in May. So out of those 5, 2 would receive the $100,000, and then the remaining grant fund balance would be split among the other 3 finalists.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, last year, the 3 finalists walked away with $20,000 in general operating support, which is not insignificant. And, we feel really great about being able to support the finalists who have done all the work and made it to that stage. We feel strongly about them if they've made it to that stage. So we're really happy to be able to support them as well.
And had you served on one of the review committees?
Oh, yes. I do it every year. It's my favorite part of the process. You learn so much. I mean, I've learned about so many organizations out there that I would not have heard of outside of Impact. And you do just amazing, amazing organizations doing fabulous work. And so that's, to me, the biggest bonus of it. You learn so much about organizations. You meet other women through the review committee process that are also really dedicated to this process. And you work together. I mean, it's very collaborative. It's very discussion-based. And in the end, you come out with, a finalist that you feel really strongly about. And then you can watch them either, win a $100,000 exciting award or go, walk home with still a very significant operating grant.
Oh, sure. 20,000 can go a long way to a boutique nonprofit that has a small target audience of support. So, wonderful work, and I hope you'll come back or send a designee or the other co-president or somebody back so we can talk again prior to the next annual grant cycle.
And yes, we will. absolutely love to.
Glad to bring you into the For the People circle of light here. So Jenny San Jose is co-president of Impact Fairfield County. Since 2015, this collective giving organization has been empowering women to engage in local philanthropy and tapping them to be active participants in grant making. ImpactFFC.org is their website. If you're a nonprofit out there, a large or small, and you meet the criteria for application, you may be able to apply, and then on May 8th, 2024, get the good news that you'll take $100,000 or something back to your organization. So Jenny, in the meantime, thank you so much, and we will hopefully talk to you again next early fall.
That would be great. Thank you so much, John.
Well, for the second of two segments this morning, we're going to be introducing yet another new friend to the award-winning For the People family. I was pleased to hear from a new friend, Liz Connolly, and she is the founder and president of an organization called Thin Line Peer Support Team, a nonprofit providing peer-to-peer mental health assistance to first responders, active military, and veterans, as well as facility access to more comprehensive mental health resources, including drug and alcohol programs here in Connecticut. So they are going to be hosting their very first major fundraiser called Walk the Line over the weekend of October 21st and 22nd. So we're going to hear a lot more about that from Liz, but we're also pleased that Liz has invited a colleague, Phyllis DeGioia. She is the CEO and clinical director of Honor Wellness Center, and she provides some of that important resource to the folks who Liz and her organization intake for consultation and support. So a fantastic effort. We always like to promote organizations and activities that will help our veterans. And we also love to talk to folks who support our first responders. Liz, you're doing both. That's fantastic. Tell us a little bit about the backstory and how this all came together for Thin Line Peer Support Team.
Absolutely. Thank you. So the Thin Line Peer Support Team started initially as the peer support team for Nelson and Access Ambulance, where I work as a paramedic. And we very quickly realized that the need was greater than just the people at our company. We started getting calls from people at other commercial ambulance companies in the area. We were getting calls from people from fire departments in the area. But the number one call that we were receiving were from not necessarily people that were still working in the field because they have their own peer support teams accessible through their jobs, but the people that have left the field, the people that have either retired, have gotten burnt out and left the field for other reasons, have been fired, whatever the case may be, that they're no longer working in the field, but they don't have access to their peer support teams anymore. But just because you're not working in the field doesn't mean that the PTSD, the depression, anxiety, drug and alcohol dependence, that doesn't go away just because you're not working in the field anymore. And we were finding that people still needed access to resources for their mental health, and they didn't have them. So we decided to turn our company team into a statewide asset. And over the last year that we've been established, we've fielded now up to 60 calls throughout the state of Connecticut, mostly in the New Haven County area. But we've branched out to field calls up in the Bristol area, Hartford area, all the way down in the Stamford area. And we actually just started helping out a county all the way down in Georgia because they didn't have any resources available to them. So we're going to be doing peer support by phone for them.
Wow.
And it's just kind of ballooned from there. in terms of who we've been able to help and who needed our help. And, you know, really our goal was to make sure that nobody ever felt like they were alone, that they didn't have a hand to reach out to. And I think we're finding that more and more people really did feel that they had been forgotten, and we're making sure that we're getting our name out there and making sure that people realize that you haven't been forgotten. You put your time in to help your community and to help your peers and to help your families and everybody else. And we're now there to help you.
So please correct me if I'm wrong, but my impression is that a lot of individuals who go into fire service or become EMTs or paramedics and work on the, you know, on the emergency medical and rescue side of things. A lot of those folks, if they have not served in the military themselves, they often come from military families. Do you find that both a lot of the individuals who are teaming up with you to add their voices as peer supporters, or among the 60 or so people who have taken advantage of the Thin Line peer support team so far, do you find that they are responders who also have served in the military, or do you have a, you know, kind of a pretty good breakdown of the amount of military folks, and then they're specializing in sort of maybe getting military calls for support, kind of triage to them versus individuals in fire or medical service who are then maybe getting triaged to peer support team members who are in that area of work?
We definitely see a lot of crossover. I know for myself, I come from a very long line of military. My dad was a Vietnam era veteran in the Navy. My uncle was Army. Mm. I serve with the 2nd Company Governor's Foot Guard. So does my husband. And he's a paramedic. So there's definitely a lot of crossover from military into the first responder world, whether they go into police, fire, or EMS. Mm-hmm. And out of the 60 some odd calls that we've personally fielded, I'd say about half of them were veterans. Our team is personally starting to work more and more with the VA and the Vet Center of Connecticut so that we can reach more and more veterans who are either not eligible for VA benefits or who are not, for whatever reason, comfortable going to the VA for their benefit, mm-hmm. you know, to use their benefits or use the mental health services through the VA.
And in terms of the point at which you take Thin Line peer support team members as interveners, and then you know, the point at which the interveners need to turn the individuals coming to you for support over to an individual like Phyllis on the line here, or someone else who's more mm-hmm. of a clinician who can then take that support to the next level that might be required.
Yeah, so we're very much the front line of mental health, of the mental health battle. So we're there to kind of empty the backpack is the moniker that we kind of use a lot.
Sure.
Of, you know, there's only so much that any one person can carry with them at any given time. Mm-hmm. And our job as a peer support member is to give you a safe place, a safe area to just kind of vent, unload, talk about whatever it is that's bothering you, with somebody who's been there, with somebody who's going to understand. You know, it's very difficult when you're a first responder or military or veteran to talk about some of the things that are bothering us and some of the things that are weighing us down. And even though it may not be triggered by something that we've seen on the job, it might be triggered by something with our family, something, you know, that we saw in the news or something else, mm-hmm. a lot of times it comes back to the things that we've seen on the job. Mm-hmm. And trying to explain what we've seen on the job to somebody who isn't in the field yeah. is very difficult. It's very difficult for them to understand. You know, it's very traumatic
sure.
to try to not only explain to somebody who's not in the field, but it's very traumatic for us to have to relive it.
Yeah.
And a peer support member is somebody who's kind of been there, done that, and is able to sit with somebody as they're kind of working through their emotions, working through their thoughts on what what's bothering them.
Yeah.
And if, you know, during that conversation, we start noticing that, you know, this person is either potentially suicidal or they're potentially, you know, there's much more they need more. They need to talk to a yeah. clinician, a therapist, or they need drug or alcohol interventions, then we can refer them to Honor Wellness Center and somebody like Phyllis, mm-hmm. who can take them to that next step.
Great. Well, we're going to take that next step and take a quick break. You two stick with us. And when we get back, we're going to talk to Phyllis DeGioia. She is CEO and clinical director of the Honor Wellness Center, who is fortunate enough to be there as the second line of defense after the members of the Thin Line Peer Support Team. Their Walk the Line fundraiser is coming up on October 21st and 22nd. And there's an event that the public can attend near the end of this activity. And we're going to be talking about that as well. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a few moments. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Halloween is almost upon us, and the Halloween season is haunting us all right now. And our friends at the Barnum Museum are scaring up a great event for the Halloween season. It's happening on Friday, October 27th, beginning at 6:30. And they're going to be welcoming paranormal author and lecturer Michael Bliwa, who's going to lead another fascinating lantern stroll of historic downtown Bridgeport. October provides the perfect time to visit scenes of suspected hauntings, Victorian-era murders, men in black sightings, and other unexplained phenomena. Remarkably, this wide variety of mysteries is centrally located within easy walking distance of the Barnum Museum. Tickets are just $5 per person if you're a Barnum Museum member and $15 for others, but participation is limited. So book your reservation now and learn more about this and a ton of other great Barnum Museum happenings by visiting their website. It's barnum-museum.org. Well, thanks for sticking with us. Maybe you know a active duty military member or a veteran. Or someone who works in fire service or is an EMT or paramedic, a first responder, a police officer, you may want to refer them to this organization, either to maybe become part of the Thin Line Peer Support Team or to avail themselves of the kind and empathetic voices and individuals who are part of that team if they need to get something off their chest or vent or just to have someone to talk to who can relate to exactly what they may be going through. We're pleased to have Liz Connolly. She's founder and president of this organization. And also Phyllis DeGioia is on the line. She's CEO and clinical director of Honor Wellness Center. So Phyllis, prior to the break, Liz described you, as I said, being sort of the next line of defense. Once a Thin Line peer support team member realizes that an individual that they may be working with or talking to or counseling may require more clinical expertise than they come to Honor Wellness Center. Tell us about your organization.
Sure. Thanks so much for having us today. Honor Wellness Center was developed in 2017 as a nonprofit as well, 501c3, to serve the mental health, addictions, and trauma needs of public safety, first responders, military, active, and veteran, and their families. We also are in process of developing an intensive outpatient treatment program that will serve those more intensive needs so that we can hopefully keep those first responders on the job if that's their choice and they're able to do that while continuing treatment according to their schedule. So we try to make it as open as possible. I have had the blessing of knowing Liz and her husband Kenny for the last 5 years. And I will say that one thing for sure among the many that I know about Liz is there is a shared passion that goes into providing that care for public safety first responders, military, and their families. That shared passion is really about trying to keep things simple and making sure that public safety first responders and military understand it's okay to be human. It's okay to not be okay. And we're going to come up with a plan. No matter what, we're going to do our best. Like Liz said, no one should ever feel as though they're alone or ashamed of having a mental health struggle, whatever that may be.
Right.
It could be cumulative stress, trauma, addictive behaviors, or family life stress, right? Just regular stuff that piles up.
And Liz also pointed out sort of the critical component of true professional empathy that, you could understand as Liz so articulately pointed out that, you can go to the best clinician in the book, but if it's going to take hours or weeks or months to get to a point where that clinician really gets a good idea of what's going on inside and what's making the job cause the trauma or the stress or the anxiety, then that turns a lot of people away from wanting to accept the help. But when they hear the voice of someone who may have shared the exact same concerning traumatic experience as they have, or have experienced the feelings that are setting them off, that is a ray of light they can get nowhere else, right?
Absolutely. Amen to that. Yeah. It really does keep things simple, and I don't mean that any of this is simple, but
no,
it's really more about
direct path between two points, right?
You betcha.
Yep.
It's simplifying the process.
Great. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. We've got a little bit of a delay on the conference line, so I'm tripping you up. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry about that. What we see with Liz and her colleagues, that shared passion is very clear, and they are truly dedicated to making sure that those resources are there and creating a network of resources that they can provide when that question is asked, hey, listen, I don't know what to do. Can you help me? And I know 110% Liz and her colleagues will say, absolutely. And that piece is integral because that first responder or military personnel has always responded that way. They've responded absolutely, no matter what.
Right.
And so those of us doing this work must respond in kind and be able to hold that space so that first responder and military personnel can know, okay, I can let it all hang out because I don't have to protect you. I don't have to hold anything back. You're not going to judge me, and you are going to help me.
Yeah, because in so many cases, you've been there. The peer support team member's been there for them. Time is growing short, and we want to make sure that anybody listening knows at 5:30 p.m. on Sunday, October 23rd, they can come out to the Connecticut Fallen Firefighters Memorial in Windsor Locks. I believe it's at the Connecticut Fire School up by the airport, and they can participate in the closing ceremonies of a two-day major fundraiser, the first one to benefit Thin Line Peer Support Team. It's called Walk the Line. And Liz, sorry to shoehorn you into about a minute or so, but can you quickly just review what Walk the Line is all about and how anybody could contribute to the cause beforehand versus just, showing up to celebrate individuals who participated?
Absolutely. So Walk the Line is to raise awareness for the mental health crisis facing the first responders, military, and veterans of our community. My members of my team will be walking from Nelson Ambulance Base in North Haven all the way up to the Connecticut Fire Academy in Windsor Locks, which is just over 60 miles over the 2 days of October 21st and 22nd. And that closing ceremony, as you mentioned, will be on October 22nd. At 5:30 p.m. up at the Fire Academy to celebrate the completion of that 60-mile trek that they are taking on. If anybody would like to donate beforehand, you can visit our website, which is www.thinlinepeersupport.org. There's a banner right at the top of our webpage that will bring you to the fundraiser website, and there's multiple ways on the website to donate, whether just supporting the relay team itself or donating towards one of our team members is going to be walking in some crazy costumes. So please, if you happen to see him out on the roads walking in his crazy costumes, take some pictures, tag us on Facebook, on Instagram with the hashtag Walk the Line. We would love to see your pictures. And it's all about raising awareness. This year's walk is in memory of Bristol Police Department's Lieutenant Dustin DeMonte and Sergeant Alex Hamsey, this obviously being the one-year anniversary of their deaths, and North Haven Fire Department's Lieutenant Anthony DeSimone and Firefighter Matthias Schwartz.
Very good. A great way to honor our protectors. And most importantly, if you're out there and you're a responder, a police officer, firefighter, EMT, paramedic, active duty military, or veteran of service, go to Thin Line Peer Support and find out how you can help or they can help you. Be part of the team or talk to part of the team, and our network of protectors will be in a far, far better place. We want to thank Liz Connolly for not only putting this organization together and leading it with her team, but also Phyllis DeGioia, who is also a critical member of the team, along with her colleagues at Honor Wellness Center's nonprofit clinic. She is the CEO and clinical director. Once again, thinlinepeersupport.org is where to go. And thank you both for being on the program this morning. So thrilled to, after meeting new friends, to be able to catch up with an old friend, Sarah Lubarski, and I go back almost 20 years. She is currently executive director of the Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame. They've been on our program a couple of times before, and we're pleased to have them back. The Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame honors the achievements of women by celebrating their legacies and telling their powerful stories and inspiring women and girls to realize their own potential. And they have got a lot of exciting things going on. This is the 30th anniversary of the Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame. Is that right, Liz?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Sarah.
The 30th anniversary.
Great.
And a
big show coming up in just a little while that we'll tell folks about up at the Bushnell. No matter where you're listening to, you can come to the 30th anniversary induction ceremony for the hall. It's happening on October 26th up at the Bushnell in Hartford. So before we promote that and ask people to consider coming out, Sarah, just give us a little bit more of the backstory on the hall.
Yeah. And thanks so much for having me, John. I really appreciate it. So the hall is 30 years old, and from its inception, we have been an educational organization to get women's accomplishments and contributions to our state and beyond out into the general public. Because when you study these things and look at the statistics, we know that 0.5% of all recorded history, only 0.5%, there are about women's stories. And 53% of the women mentioned in history are depicted in domestic roles, and only 2% are depicted in the workforce. So, you know, we want to be able to bring out these accomplishments around women, and we do that through our educational programs every day of the year. I mean, we'll be talking about the induction ceremony, which is our annual event, but all the other days of the year, we're doing educational programs. We have a program called the See It, Be It program that we do virtually within the public schools across Connecticut. And that brings a 45-minute women's history lesson to many, many students every month, October through May. And, of course, all of our curriculum follows the Connecticut standards, and we have it vetted by educators and by historians as well. We also have talks on the road, which are for our adult learners. And we're in a lot of different libraries and civic organizations in companies doing a 45-minute talk. It's a PowerPoint presentation with narrative to it and video and all kinds of fun things. So we make it as interactive as possible. And we also have our banners, our Rise Up Sister banners, all about the right to vote and suffrage in the state of Connecticut. That any organization can call us and have at their organization. So everything that we do is bent towards educating the public about women's achievements. And we think it's important to talk to both boys and girls about whose shoulders that they're standing on, and also adults. And, you know, because it brings in history, it gives us some context about where we are today.
Very good. Over the 30 years, you have developed a legion of young women who are able to say, "I can do that." That's the best part of all of this. Let's turn our attention in the encapsulated time that we have to just reminding folks at this 30th year anniversary. Sarah, the honorees, starting with the posthumous honor for Regina Winters Toussaint.
Yeah, so Regina was a trailblazing architect and a former principal of Zared Enterprises. At the time, she was the only Black woman in the state of Connecticut that had her own architecture firm, and she is was a beloved member of the New Haven community. And, you know, this is our posthumous stories are my favorite, because these are the stories that can get lost in the dust of time. And this is one of the reasons that we do this. And we do a tribute film for all of our inductees, which once they are inducted, they'll be put up into our inductee Hall of Fame on our website, and anybody can come and see that. Right. We're also inducting Carla Squatrito, who is the founder and former president of Carla's Pasta, who has an amazing story. Laura Cruikshank, who's the university master planner and chief architect at the University of Connecticut, which she has done some amazing buildings and a lot of work.
Another architect.
There. Yes, and another architect. So our theme this year is Women Who Build. So we do have some architects on there, but we also have women who have built up their own businesses. And then last but certainly not least is Lisa Cortez, who's an Emmy-winning film producer and celebrated director. So we're very excited about the lineup. Anybody that wants to learn more can go to our website at cwhf.org and go under events under the 2023 induction ceremony. And there's lots of information there and a place where you can buy tickets if you'd like to attend.
Sure. And certainly many, many people may not know that they are looking at a Laura Cruikshank creation, but her impression is very widespread and well known. And anyone who has enjoyed a pot or a serving of Carla's pasta, which she took from her kitchen to a multi-million-dollar food production company, starting as an immigrant to America at the age of 27, just a fabulous story. And you know, I know there are fans, no matter what radio station that you're listening to us on, folks who have seen the Academy Award-winning film Precious. And there's a lot of folks, including myself, who are big fans of back in the day, some of the pioneers in hip hop, Run DMC and the Beastie Boys. Lisa has helped launch their careers and worked on that film and so many other fantastic projects. And it's a great place to be able to get together with all of these inductees to the 30th anniversary Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame. Let's talk looking forward, Sarah. You never get tired of welcoming new women into the ranks as volunteers and supporters. If there's someone listening this morning or on the podcast who thinks that they might like to get involved in some capacity, how does that work?
Well, they can just give us a call at the Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame at 203-392-9007 or go to info@cwhf.org and send us an email. We're always looking for people to volunteer. We need researchers. We need historians. We have consulting scholars here. And we always want more. So they can get a hold of us that way. And if there are any teachers out there, we have curriculum, free downloadable curriculum on our website. But we also have our programs that we bring into the school. We do professional development workshops for teachers and new teachers to show them around our website and show them how to use our curriculum. So any and all of those people are more than welcome to get in touch with us.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate having your voice on the program and always great to catch up with you, Sarah. And hearty congratulations over the great work that you and the organization has done now over the past 30 years here in Connecticut, really bringing important historical inspiration to so many women, and particularly young women who have really, as you pointed out, not enjoyed the type of attention and spotlight in history that they should, but in playing such an important role in developing women who are making history today and who will in the future, the Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame, if you'd like to visit them or find out more, or perhaps get tickets or a table to the 30th Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame Anniversary Awards coming up, go to cwhf.org. And Sarah, once again, thank you so much for being part of the program this morning. We'll talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.